We'll get around God's word today, and I think through sickness and treatment and stuff, I think I've been about 6 months waiting to get up here, so it's a good opportunity. So I've got a little caveat. This won't be an expository message. I'm sorry. I can only do what I can do. So I hope you're all generous today and don't mind something different. So I want to do a little bit of a history snap and bring it through to the age that we're living in now. So I want to go back about 300 years to 1730. And I want you to picture a nation that became the greatest nation in the world, that's the British Empire, at its absolute lowest point, even worse, they say, than the era of the Iron Age, when things were pretty basic. And there's a famous woodcut which was done by William Hogarth, and it's of Gin Lane. And he did a series. He was a social commentator, and he was like, in that time, a cartoonist. And he did Gin Lane, Beer Street, and one called Animal Cruelty, which was the four stages of deprivation that people were cruel to their animals. And he was trying to wake the population up and show them in a mirror form of where they'd sunk. And Sir Robert Walpole was the first Lord of the Treasury, effectively the British PM, and he was Prime Minister for about 40 years. And I remember Vishal Mangalwadi, who wrote the book that made your world, which I can highly recommend. It's a wonderful book, best book apart from the Bible that I ever read. And he said that Robert Walpole was the most, he was the worst Prime Minister that Britain ever had back in the day. And he effectively was a wheeler and dealer and didn't really care what happened, wielded a huge amount of influence and was very corrupt. But unfortunately, a member of our family married into that family, so it's not a popular topic. Anyway, so we had an era of great deprivation, and the corn that used to be sold for food, the corn merchants realised that they could make a lot more money if they turned it into alcohol. And so basically the whole population were basically hooked on alcohol, on drink, and hence the famous woodcut called Gin Lane, which showed just how bad things had gone. And I'll just go down here a little bit. Henry Scougal, who was a well-known Scottish theologian, wrote, "At the time, true religion is a union of the soul with God. It is Christ formed within us." And he had a great influence on John and Charles Wesley. So we had this time of great deprivation. And I want you to just think about the times we're living in now. This was far worse. But God had a plan. And he raised up John and Charles Wesley and George Whitefield and others. And I just forget the name of the famous American, Jonathan Edwards, about the same time. And they were uncompromising men of great conviction. But even John Wesley took quite a while, took quite a while to come to that place of the real conviction or knowledge. He was convicted, but the knowledge that he was completely saved, and it was only by grace alone, through faith. So after that struggle, there was a period that in America was called the Great Awakening. In England, it was called the Evangelical Revival. So we're going back 300 years, and as we look back, this was a time when people had forgotten about God. Like now, they had no knowledge of God, and it really took men in this case, but there were women in the background as well, of great conviction and courage, because Wesley and others would. In the end, the Church of England said, "No, you're too red hot for us. You can't preach in our churches." So they had to preach open air, and people would get wild bulls and drive them into the crowd, and people got killed. And Wesley got injured on occasions, but God spared his life. But there were people killed for the sake of preaching the gospel. So Wesley's, the Whitfields, and an army of lay preachers, and by the 18th century, all of Britain had been evangelised. John Wesley rode 250,000 miles, not kilometres, crisscrossing England. And he went to the US for a while, over to America as it was called then. But he would leave one village and he'd get on his horse, and the horse would go off, follow the road, and he would write his next message as he was going on the horse. So, you know, pretty amazing stuff. So, I'll give you a few statistics. At that time, they had rampant drunkenness, gambling so excessive that England was described as one vast casino, the slave trade was in full force, and only 2 in 5 children lived past 5 years. Morality in Britain had collapsed to a degree that was never known in any Christian country at the time. That was Bishop Berkeley wrote that. So with this outpouring of God's Spirit, many claim Britain was saved from a revolution like the French Revolution. So that's how much difference it made, and that was God's timing for the nation. And then that set them up as a platform for the British Empire to really reach its zenith, or when it reached its full strength, it ruled over 400 million people. So today, I don't know, that might be a billion if in today's terms. So today, the case for Christ has never been stronger, because in Australia, we too have put God on the shelf and gone our own way. And we can really truly say that, you know, we're not the lucky country anymore. I know there's a much greater quote than that, but I don't just remember the detail. But I remember being in Collingwood in a toy shop, and there's an old-fashioned toy shop down below in the basement of one of the shops in the main street of Collingwood. And they have all these tin toys and, you know, toys that people used to make with matchboxes and all that sort of history. And there were two girls there, and they were having a look at all the toys, and my wife and I, Kate and I, were looking around. And one of the girls said, "Oh, isn't that so cute?" And she said, what? And she said, that boat thing. And she said, "What is it?" And she said, "Oh, that's Noah's Ark." And this girl had no concept of what Noah's Ark was, and I could hear this girl explaining to her. But, you know, every generation complains about the generation they live in, you know, the times they live in. That's human nature. But, you know, back in Jesus' time, they had crucifixion. It was a brutal society. And, you know, then all the believers were dispersed, weren't they? And that was all part of God's plan. So, you know, the government and everything that we've got today is still part of God's plan. And I'm often, you know, look, some of us mix one, I'm another one. I think it was Alex Antic, I think the Liberal Conservative, said you should join a party. Just join any party if you want to change things. And so we did. Mick and I did. He made a big mistake, but I made the right call. But, you know, I like this blue colour. But, you know, the solution is not changing the government. This may help, but it's not the answer. 2, we could save the planet. But didn't God say he would never again destroy the earth? Oh, that's a waste of time. Or 3, we could get rid of religion. Oh, we've tried that. We could get rid of traditional values. Reinvent the wheel. All those things have failed. So what we've got now, we've got rid of religion, we've got rid of traditional values, we've now got men who think they're women, women who think they're men, record numbers of suicides, huge increases in the rates of depression, especially amongst our young people that are our future. When I left school, I wanted to join the military. It was my first option, go to Duntroon, but my grades weren't good enough. Then I was going to either become a farmer or a carpenter. And I just went off and did it. I said to my folks, I'm off, see ya, and I was gone. 16, I think I was. And, you know, just full of hope and optimism and confidence, too much confidence, that led to arrogance, but anyway, we'll get there. So we go back to Britain. The great change brought to Britain in the last part of the 18th century resulted in the transformation of a society. There were huge advances in engineering and inventions, sewerage, gas lighting in the streets. But the biggest change was family life and moral values. And they came from the gospel. The gospel is the only hope for our nation. It's the only thing that changed all of us. That's why we're sitting here. Transformed us. And the more we yield and the more we give over, the better our lives get and the more purpose we've got, the less fear we've got, the more confidence and peace we have. We have peace when we go to bed at night, don't we? So a lot of things happened after this. There was a group called the Clapham Sect that were raised up. God raised them up. I think when I spoke about communion, I talked about Richard Johnson, who preached out of Psalms, the first message under a gum tree at Botany Bay. What shall I render unto the Lord for all his goodness towards me, for all his benefits towards me? I shall take up the cup of salvation and call upon the name of the Lord. So he was an evangelical, that is, Bible-believing Christian who preached the first message in our nation. So don't tell me God didn't have a plan. He was handpicked by Wilberforce and others, who was a great friend of William Pitt, the Prime Minister, and they picked him, and he in turn said, well, the fleet that come out here, if I'm coming, it's got to be done right. No ship was older than 5 years. All the ships had extra provisions. When they had Sunday services up on deck for all the convicts, when the convicts arrived in Australia, they weighed more than when they left Britain. So that's Christian care for you. Christians, you do make a difference. What's in here transforms your actions. You live differently. You are a blessing and a benefit. You're the most valuable thing in our society. And I'll just go forward a little bit to just read a quote just to back that up. Alexander Solzhenitsyn was a prominent Russian writer and historian and a Nobel Prize winner. And he was a refugee from Russia. He spent many, many years in the gulags, living on a straw, and being starved, basically. So the quote I want to read you, not the whole quote, but just going into it, he said, the strength or weakness of a society depends more on the level of its spiritual life than on its economy. So we've got the economy, we've got a strong economy, but our nation is still going down. We've got, God in his grace has given us all these minerals that are keeping our economy going, but the life of the people is disintegrating. So going back to Britain, so at the end of the 18th century, things are really improving. And Christians were driven to good works, which changed their society. Hebrews 10:24-25 says, let us take thought on how to spur one another to good works. And that's what drove the change. The engine inside, the transformation inside, drove people to change. And probably one of the best known examples is the lady with the lamp, Florence Nightingale, who devoted her life to serving her fellow man. And she had strong encounters with God. She was a devout Christian. She was born to a very well-to-do family. And inspired by a calling from God, she enrolled to learn nursing in Germany. And nursing was considered a trade. It was a thing for not well-to-do ladies to do. But she rejected a very suitable man as a potential husband. And she then sowed her life into nursing. And obviously we all know how she went to Crimea, and that's where really modern nursing was born, the Crimean War. Crimea on the Black Sea, like where all the trouble is today with Ukraine. So she said, on rejecting her suitor, she said she had a moral active nature that required satisfaction, and she couldn't just indulge herself with an easy life. Another thing that happened, that child labour was banned in the mines. In 1802, the 12-hour day was instituted for apprentices. In 1835, there was Cruelty to Animals Act, and that was the forerunner of the RSPCA. So all done by Christians. So I've told you about Richard Johnson and the fleet. One little point I missed was that there were only 42 deaths, and all those ships arrived in the harbour within days of each other, and not a ship was lost. So that's God's hand and God's blessing. These are just some of the changes brought about by the heart change in society, where people were compelled to good works. And what did these people have in common? Their faith. John Wesley spoke about the we, not the me. But here is the key. Only an encounter with Jesus Christ can transform a heart. Two, a transformed heart means a changed person. Three, that person now has different actions, which in turn, four, affect his or her family life, friendships and workplace, which in turn change the community, which changes society and then the nation. So really why I'm going through this, as I said, it's not expository by any means, and there's hardly a scripture there. I had to put a few in, but so I didn't get a fail. But is to just to illustrate how important you all are to the community you live in. And we know in Hebrews 1 it talks about a great cloud of witnesses. They are our heritage, and all these people I'm speaking about are our heritage as well. So if you feel embarrassed about your faith, don't. If you're envious because some behaviours are now off limits to you, or you hanker after the old days, good old days, yours, don't. Because you have the only solution, and you are part of the only solution. You are the salt and the light, and the good old days aren't coming back. As a nation and as a people, we have prosperity like never before, much greater than our parents. However, people have lost the art of community. We've lost community, the thing of belonging together and caring for one another. We have more freedoms. Marriage isn't valued or respected. Values that were accepted as the norm have been thrown aside. Churches are closing by the dozens. The traditions that were the glue of society have been discarded. We become a hard and selfish society, demanding our needs be met. The trend has found its way into politics, where the politicians pander to the voters rather than govern for the nation's good with a generational perspective. And I told you, I mentioned Alexander Solzhenitsyn and what he said about the spiritual life of a nation. Now, after a respectable time of quarantine, I feel I've got a high enough clearance now to go and talk about Joseph and of Egypt fame. Genesis 40, Pharaoh said, "See, I have set you," this is Joseph speaking to Joseph, "over all the land of Egypt." Remember, he was only 30 years of age, and the first 30 had been a pretty rough. However, and here's a point, however, he didn't try and convert all the Egyptians, now that he was number two boss in the land. He didn't try and unseat the Pharaoh. He didn't refuse to marry his wife, who was the daughter of a pagan priest. He stayed, Shane, he stayed in his lane. And that's what we all should do. The mission that God had ordained for him, he stayed in his lane. Joseph didn't stay in a bed of despair or say, "I'm living with all these pagans, where are my people?" He went to work on his assignment that God had given him. So for us believers, in a hostile environment today, the answer is opportunity, discipleship, and divine appointments. And that's the thing I love about travelling, especially overseas, is those divine appointments. I think they're better than the sightseeing. Just have so many opportunities to pray for or pray with, or to bless a shopkeeper that's having a hard time. Just speak a blessing over the shop. You know, just things like that. So discipleship, you know, is just a one-on-one thing, isn't it? So this is our daily mission, not to be overwhelmed by the state of the world. In Roman times, like I said, when the church began, it was worse. So in closing, I know many will mark me down for the lack of scriptural quotes. So to finish, I'll give you Philippians 2:13, the Amplified. So daily, for it is not in your strength, but it is God who is effectively at work in you, both to will and to work. That is strengthening, energizing, and creating in you the longing and the ability to fulfill your purpose for his good pleasure. So I'm going to finish up with a poem that I wrote. So the main takeaway is stay in your lane and use the gifts that you've got and be a friend and a brother or a sister to people in need, and don't hide your light under a bushel, not the other way around. So I wrote this poem a while ago, and as I was doing this message yesterday, I came across it again, and I thought, oh, I need to rewrite that, it's a bit rough. So it's about my life, and it's called Now I'm a Seeker. Now when I was young, with muscles rippling, I bent my back, I was no stripling. With arrogance and hubris, I plied my craft. Things came easy, I had but laugh. But the crop produced was thin and weedy, and my soul became very dark and needy. Of sowing and reaping, I did not know. Soon weeds appeared, no crop to show. Just in time, he came and knocked. The door I opened, it was not locked. No doubt his spirit, it worked the change, a revolution, life never the same. New virtues found, new living discovered, so much to learn, my sins are covered. His precious blood, down it flowed, it washed me clean till I glowed. Now I'm older, I sometimes hanker after those days of strength and anger. Of energy and vigour I had a plenty, what did it profit? It all was empty. In place of youth now gone and wilted, the Holy Spirit my constant, I'm never jilted. Now it's my will I bend, muscles weaker, his strength I need, now I'm a seeker. In conclusion I have to say that living for Jesus is the only way.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ernest. Appreciate it. That was really good. And, you know, I was just thinking the other day about how, you know, just the challenges in society and culture and so on. But also I'm noticing more and more how not just our church but many churches are being forced to recognise the role of the church in society. Yeah, because, you know, I guess when things start going adrift, the question is, well, what's going on? What's happening here? And the reality is we've had it so good for so long in Australia that the tendency is to just start to coast and relax and take things for granted. And one of the things we tend to take for granted is our faith. And we have forgotten the call that God has given us. That I was talking to someone just about the importance of having a perspective on the covenants in the scriptures, because the new covenant is not just a ticket to glory. There's actually it's an agreement whereby we carry a responsibility before God to fulfill our part in that. And the call is that we would be salt and light on the earth. Our role is really not much different to what it was for the Israelites. We're called to be a light to the nations. God has given us his word so that we can instruct others in how they should live, and that they in the process would go recognizing the goodness in how we live, should give glory to God, because they understand that he's the source of those things and are drawn to him as a result. And it's the ebb and flow of things. It's sorry, I shouldn't be preaching, should I? But it's just interesting that when we look at prophetic images, the moon is a representation of the church. When you read in Revelation about the moon turning to blood, it's a picture of the persecution of the church, because there's a lot of blood in persecution and so on. But the interesting thing about the moon, and God has created everything to reveal his wonders and his glory, is that it waxes and wanes. And there are times when it shines very brilliantly on the earth, and times when you can hardly see it, or it's just a sliver. So the church is. There are times when we shine very brightly, and there are times when we're just a sliver. But I just really believe that we're in a season where God is causing the church to wax. We've sort of been through a waning period, and maybe that'll go a bit longer. But there's a stirring happening where people are starting to get serious about their faith and the implications of it. And this is what happened during the Reformation, because there's all this discussion about, well, what is faith and so on, and you've got the 50 Years' War or the 100 Years' War going on in Germany at the time, and people are going, what's going on? And in the whole process and the disruption that happened, people began to think, well, what is it that we really believe, and what does that mean for us today? And so it's an exciting time, and I'm not going to go on anymore.